Hi, this is Peter Santoscano, longtime producer and host of Citizens Climate Radio. Have you noticed that things have changed a bit here over the past year and a half? Yeah, I've been able to work with some extraordinary young people who are transforming this podcast. There are many more voices, many more sections, many more moving parts. One change you're going to notice today is not only do we have a new team member, but the show is 5 minutes longer. From now on, our format will be 35 minutes. It's just there's so much good stuff to share, and we don't want to rush it. So enjoy the show. Hi there, and welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. This is your climate change podcast. In this show, we highlight people's stories. We celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for discussing climate change. I'm your host, Peter Santoscano. Hey there. Welcome to episode 93 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, March 22nd, 2024. Today, we're going to consider the four roles changemakers traditionally take. Are you an advocate, a helper, an organizer, or perhaps a rebel? Maybe you take on different roles in your work to address the causes and the impacts of climate change. Eileen Flanagan, a Quaker author, speaker, and climate change mover and shaker, will explain the four roles for us. Then you're going to hear a lively conversation I had with two of my team members. Dana Nucicelli gets super nerdy with us in the nerd corner. He's geeking out over permitting reform. It's also known as permitting modernization. Horace Mo joins us from China with good news about his country's first carbon trading regulations. But first, I want to introduce you to our newest Citizens Climate Radio team member, Erica Valdez.
Have you ever heard of the Inland Empire? To all the locals, this valley is a sweet spot of Southern California where you can spend time at the beach, the mountains, and the desert all in one day. To me, the Inland Empire is the region I call home. Hi everyone, my name is Erica Valdez. I'm a senior at Northern Arizona University, majoring in environmental sustainability and minoring in Spanish and community engagement. Growing up in this beautiful part of California, I spent most of my childhood outdoors, whether at the beach, on camping trips, or on the streets of my neighborhood, staying connected to my surrounding environment became a habit. As I got older and some of my time outdoors was replaced by the news, I noticed everyone talking about climate change. Anchors used buzzwords like increasing temperatures and rising sea levels. They encouraged us to do our part by taking shorter showers and separating our recyclables. Looking back, these concerns and recommendations were going in one ear and out the other, not just for me, but for those around me. It wasn't until I did some research and I took a climate science class in high school that I realized how big of a problem this really was. My confusion quickly turned to curiosity and passion. Now, I study the environment in Flagstaff, Arizona, which is unlike the usual desert landscape that comes to mind. Instead, picture a small college town in the snowy mountains of Arizona. Here, I'm grateful to have the Coconino National Forest in my backyard. While at school, I explore the surrounding land. I also enjoy relaxing in a hammock on campus. Oh, and I recently started bouldering, but I can't say I'm the best at it. I also take advantage of living in the first dark sky city in the United States. Did you know that Flagstaff has very low light pollution? This means that the night sky is not polluted with any artificial light, and it makes for excellent stargazing. Here in Northern Arizona, I'm able to recognize the importance of our environment just as I did as a kid in California. Only things are a little different now. As I've watched shifts in our climate become more intense, feelings of climate doom and anxiety have grown within me. I don't know about you, but talking and even just thinking about climate change can exhaust me, but I refuse to let it overwhelm me. Because of these feelings, I chose to learn how I can make an impact. I decided to pursue a degree in environmental sustainability. I'm committed to supporting others in this global conversation, to communicate climate change in a way that encourages, not one that creates fear or guilt, and to ensure that future generations have the opportunity to connect with their environment as I did. And I'm very excited to do this through my work with Citizens Climate Radio.
Thank you, Erica, and welcome aboard. In a moment, Erica Valdez will join Horace Mo and me for a spirited conversation about our roles in the climate movement. none of us discovers our roles right away, and our roles do grow, change, and develop over time. So what about you? What's your role on our rapidly changing planet? In 2017, we featured Eileen Flanagan. It was for episode 9 of this podcast. As the board chair of Earthquaker Action Team, or EQUATE, Eileen led a successful effort to stop one of the largest banks in the United States from financing mountaintop removal coal mining. Later, as the EQUATE campaign director, Eileen played a pivotal role in launching a global campaign against Vanguard. This is the largest investor in fossil fuels worldwide. Her dedication and leadership have made a significant impact on the fight against climate change. So I asked Eileen about the steps we can take to move the public and lawmakers to action. And she answered, "What do you know about the four roles most commonly taken on by changemakers?" And I was like, that there are four of them? Lucky for you, Eileen will break them down for us. After Eileen Flanagan explains the four roles, Erica Valdez, a college student studying change movements, will chat with me about the organizer role. This one, I have to say, is the hardest to explain. Erica goes into more details for us and provides some very inspiring examples. Horace Moe will then jump into the conversation to tell us about the role that currently best suits him. Eileen told me about Bill Moyer, who dove deep into social change movements. He then spent much of his life leading trainings around nonviolent direct action. He also identified and taught successful strategies for bringing about social change. Eileen shared with me some of Moyer's teachings about the roles we might take when seeking to change the world around us.
And he found that there were four roles that showed up over and over again. And the names we've given them are helper, advocate, organizer, and rebel. And they show up in all kinds of ways. And the way to think of it is really, what is their orientation? So a helper's orientation is, what can I do to make things better without messing with the system? So if you're concerned about climate change, a helper might insulate their home, put solar panels on, maybe do that in their congregation, try and live a low carbon footprint life. That sort of thing would be attractive to someone who's naturally a helper. An advocate takes the role of trying to use the tools of the system to change things. So lobbying, using lawsuits, trying to convince elected officials and people in power to make decisions, essentially using the tools of the system. In contrast, a rebel uses disruptive tactics. They don't do letter writing. They don't do lobbying. Instead, they do protests of various kinds. In my tradition, we usually use nonviolent direct action, targeting a decision maker, maybe a corporation, and trying to get them to change a policy through consistent troublemaking. The fourth role is called the organizer. And in some ways, the organizer is the trickiest because they can use different kinds of tactics. But the thing that makes someone an organizer is they are oriented toward their group, toward their community. So for example, someone who says, let's get our congregation together and see what we can do together about climate change. That's a very organizer way of thinking about it. And the group might decide to insulate the church, or they might decide to, you know, go lobby together, or they might take up a rebel tactic. The focus of the organizer is what will our group do? So this shows up again and again in different kinds of social change. If you think about the Montgomery bus boycott, Rosa Parks was the rebel. She got arrested for refusing to move on the bus, but there wouldn't have been a big thing if it hadn't been for the woman who stayed up all night mimeographing leaflets saying, let's all boycott the buses on Monday. She played the organizer role. She got people out. The advocate role was played by the NAACP that filed a lawsuit against the Montgomery bus system. And then helpers were the people who drove people. The ordinary citizens of Montgomery and the African-American community walked to work for over a year in order to put pressure on the bus company. They wouldn't have been able to do that without the helpers who came and gave people rides and things like that. One thing I found really helpful about the four roles is to realize that organizations play a niche But then each organization needs in some way people who have these different strengths. So even though my group, we have helpers and they're the people who bring cookies to the meeting. And boy, are we glad that they're part of us, right? If we do civil disobedience, we need people who are thinking about taking care of people and things like that. So there's an individual level to finding out what are your gifts and proclivities that you can bring to the movement. Organizations are most effective when they pick one. An organization that tries to play all four roles is probably going to be less effective because they're jumping around too much.
I love this conversation that Eileen Flanagan has started for us. And I think a lot about these roles. There is one role, though, that I have a lot of questions about, and that's the organizer role. I understand it, but I want to understand it better. So to help me with that is our newest team member, Erica Valdez. Hey, Erica, how are you?
I'm good, Peterson.
Welcome to the show, your very first time on Citizens Climate Radio.
Yes, I'm very excited to be here.
So you've done some research for your studies, and you've looked at this organizer role. What can you share with me and with the listener to help us better understand this particular role?
Before I started my studies, I had no idea that the organizer role existed, and it was just very hard to digest. First, I want to point out that in the world of organizing, we constantly refer to this process called the cycle of organizing. Just to touch on some of the points that Eileen makes, we do look inward onto the group or into the group. We always start by connecting with the people, and this could be those in the community, those in the group, those just involved in our mission. We start by building relationships in order to identify the issues. And once we connect with these people involved, we can plan on how to support and sustain the group and build collective power. And then organizers and their group carry out the action. Organizers use similar tactics to the other four roles that we talk about, but throughout this whole cycle, it's very important to reflect and evaluate so we don't lose sight of the group vision.
The thing that I appreciate most about and I understand the most about the organizer model is that the organizer is not a leader in a traditional hierarchical sense, but more like a facilitator. Am I getting that right?
Exactly. You're right on point. Organizers use relational and collaborative spaces. They don't just lead all alone. They actually try to avoid one person leading and doing all the work because this could lead to potential burnout. I always ask people, have you ever had a group project and just taken the initiative to do all the work yourself? Yeah, it's very tiring and I get over the work so fast. And this is what organizers try to avoid. Instead, they look for and identify the leaders. Yeah, they rarely lead the group alone.
Can you give us any examples of like people in history that have done this kind of work?
There are so many examples throughout history that I could talk for days about, but one that stands out to me is Ella Baker. She's a well-known activist and grassroots organizer of the U.S. United States Civil Rights Movement in the 50s and 60s. She advocated similarly to Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, but she never prioritized being the face of the movement. Instead, she introduces this term called spade work. And in this context, we refer to the spade as a gardening tool. It does a lot of the detail work to create these large, beautiful gardens. And she uses spade work to describe the behind the scenes, the nitty gritty work that keeps the momentum of the action. And often this work is not seen or recognized. And through this, she prioritized building relationships and identifying the leaders in the movement so that it would outlast her. It was a really long-lasting movement, and she didn't lead the group alone.
It's amazing you mention Ella Baker because I just saw a movie, a biopic, that had her as one of the main characters.
Really?
Yeah, it's this new movie on Netflix called Rustin, about Bayard Rustin, who is another organizer that many people never heard of. Because like Ella Baker, he stayed behind the scenes. He also stayed behind the scenes, not just because he was an organizer, but because he was openly gay at a time when that was really hard to be and it would have tanked the movement. So he stayed in the shadows in a way. He organized the March on Washington, where Dr. King gave his famous speech, but he didn't do it himself. He had a whole team of many young people that he helped to build that leadership, to identify the leadership, just like you say. So if anyone wants to see this in action, this movie, Rustin, is great because you see Ella Baker identifying Rustin as someone who needs to step up, and then you see him doing it, and it's lovely to see it in action. And now that you explain all this, I'm like, oh yeah, those total organizers and organizer roles.
Yeah, I think those characteristics are the most admirable of the organizer role, and we can see it in so many people throughout history.
What about you in the work that you've done so far? What roles have you taken, and which one or ones fit you best?
Before studying community organizing, I, again, had no idea that these roles existed and that like we could distinguish characteristics between them. After I started studying it, I realized that in my roles on campus, off campus, I realized I wasn't putting these things into practice when leading these groups or just being involved in these groups. And those around me were often facing a lot of burnout. Our initiatives just stopped moving forward, which is very, very common if we're not putting these things into practice. As an organizer now, and I consider myself a community organizer, I've learned the importance of building relationships and identifying leaders, evaluating the whole time. What am I doing wrong? What's working? How can I support my group better? And this has made all the difference in the groups that I'm involved in.
I want to bring another voice into this conversation from a completely other country and time zone. And for you listening, we're recording this, well, in the United States, early in the morning. What time is it by you there, Erica, right now?
It's about 8 a.m.
And joining us from China, where it's about midnight, I think, or later, is our very own Horace Moe. Hey, Horace.
Hey, Peterson.
Hey, I hear it's an auspicious day over there.
Yes, it is. Just for our listeners, you might be hearing firecrackers or fireworks that are going off right now outside my window, actually. It's the Chinese Lunar New Year, so I can't really help with that. Everybody is in a very joyful vibes. Let's get to the topic. I really agree with what Erica said about her experience as an organizer, and I think her sharings actually deepen my understanding of the work of being an organizer, even though I've never had that kind of experience before. It is really amazing work that organizers like you are doing for our social goods. I identify myself as a helper. And for our audience to know, the definition of a helper given by Eileen is what I can do to make things better. This idea strikes with me the most. It indicates doable action at an individual level whenever I can offer support or whatever that is needed by other people. It almost always brings me a fulfilling feeling that I am valued, and is touching to see people smiling back at me when I offer whatever help that they actually are in need. Mm. And I just enjoy this kind of interaction with people around me.
I feel very much that I'm a helper too. For you, Horace, where have you been a helper, and how have you shown yourself to be a helper?
When I was an undergrad at University of Michigan, I actually volunteered for a local sustainable food organization. What I did was pretty simple. The organization just need people to help them hand out free vegan burgers, which were so delicious, by the way. I once had 3 burgers from the organization just for breakfast. They tried to give away free vegan burgers to promote their brand, but the most important thing is to get people interested in vegan burgers, which are great alternatives to meat-based burgers. For our listeners, gosh, if you're listening to this and you have not tried a vegan-based burger before, I strongly suggest you to try out a vegan burger, which tastes almost exactly the same as meat-based burgers. They set up a booth by the football stadium one of those college football game days, and I just simply helped them hand out those free vegan burgers to the fans who were going to the tailgate parties. It's a simple task. Mm. I am confident that most people are able to hand out burgers.
I know that it's super difficult to remember how important these little tasks are, and they can just sometimes get muddled and forgotten in the big picture. Not everyone needs to be an Ella Baker in order to make a difference. It's these little tasks that everyone is able to do that make a very big difference in whatever mission we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and so often food is part of it, right? Preparing sandwiches or giving them out. The thing that I have found too, that
I'm so pleased with. I'm an introvert, so I'm super shy around people, which a lot of people don't think about because, you know, I'm very engaged on the radio. I really struggle unless I have a role. And once I have a role, and it might be handing out vegan burgers or teaching or something, I feel much more confident and able to move within society because I've got a specific role to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I also consider myself an introvert. I am not that type of person who can speak a lot or just speak loudly in front of the public or in front of a lot of strangers. Handing out vegan-based burgers is such a just like customized task for me to do because I just feel relieved but also value at the same time that I can contribute to a community work that I enjoy doing.
I don't know, Eric. I'm starting to get a little suspicious that Horace is working for Big Vegan.
He's advocating pretty well for him.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I'm just going to be franky. That kind of opened the door for me. You know, when I was a helper for that organization, I also became a learner. I learned about the nutrients of those vegan-based burgers and what are the process of making those burgers, what are the ingredients of those burgers, and what's the difference between those vegan-based burgers and meat-based burgers, and especially the impact on our environment and the welfare of the animals. So vegan-based burgers, like I mentioned before, they're so good. You have to try if you haven't.
Yeah. You keep pushing this. Yeah, I know. I don't know. Every time, do you get like a quarter every time, a dollar every time you say that? I wonder. But, you know, as you're saying this, like you went to do this as a helper and then you learned something. And I imagine you also got to know some people. And that's the other thing that I think it's important. When we're looking to change the world or change a law or change a system, we may not always be successful. In fact, often we're not. We may have limited success at first and it takes time. But other changes happen, changes with relationships, and people get to know each other, and you network, and you find out about other groups, and you learn other things. And that's part of the change movement as well, not just the win or the lose, but the building of the community.
Yeah, and that's why I love the relational aspect of all of these roles. It creates a community that even if you try and fail, you're trying and failing together, and it might spark a new initiative. It might, again, help us network in order to just get new ideas and bounce off of each other and create collaborative spaces. And that's what I love about this work.
Horace, other than pushing vegan burgers, is there anything else you want to add?
I have to give a disclaimer. I did not get paid by saying or promoting vegan-based burgers. Yeah, I definitely echo with what you said as being an organizer. People like you also need helpers like me. And we helpers also look up to you. We just might need that kind of person who can gather people together and come up with a collective plan that we can work on something together. Each role that is played by either a helper or an organizer is equally important. Together, that would foster a very reciprocal relationship, which will definitely help people struggle for the same goal in a proper and efficient way.
So for you listening, what about you? Are you a helper, an advocate, an organizer, a rebel? Are you part of an organization that maybe is an advocate organization, but within it, you're not an advocate, you're a helper or an organizer? We really would love to hear what you have to say. Feel free to send us an email, radio@citizensclimate.org, and we'll get back to you. And if you want, you could actually be on the air to share some of your ideas. That email address again is radio@citizensclimate.org. Erica, Horace, thank you so much for being on the show today and for helping so much with the production of Citizens Climate Radio.
Thank you, Peterson and Erica. My pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Super happy to be here.
This episode of Citizens Climate Radio has been brought to you by Horace's Vegan Burgers.
I appreciate it.
That was Horace Moe and Erica Valdez, members of the Citizens Climate Radio team. You also heard Quaker author, speaker, and climate activist Eileen Flanagan. To learn more about Eileen's books and online workshops, visit eileenflanagan.com.
In our show notes, I have links to other resources. I've even included online quizzes you can take to better understand yourself and the roles you play in society. Visit ccLUSA.org/radio. That's ccLUSA.org/radio. Now it is time for the Nerd Corner.
Hi, I'm Dana Nucitelli, CCL Research Coordinator, and this is the Nerd Corner. I'm here to highlight some interesting new climate research for the nerds out there and to make it understandable for the nerd curious. In this episode, we consider the question, what exactly is permitting reform and why is it so important? A permit is how a local, state, or federal government gives the go-ahead to start a new construction project. During the permitting process, the government makes sure that the construction and operation of the project won't unduly harm workers, the local community, or the environment. That's an important process, but permitting adds time and expense to projects of all kinds, so it's important to strike the right balance. We want the permitting process to be thorough, but not take so long that it delays the critical clean energy transition. Right now, the permitting process is taking so long that if we don't make it more efficient, we won't be able to meet our national climate commitments. Electrical transmission lines are particularly important because they're needed to connect more cheap and clean solar and wind energy to the electrical grid. But new transmission lines currently take about a decade to permit and build, which is just too slow. One helpful bill that CCL has advocated for is called the Big Wires Act. It would require each region of the country to build more transmission lines connecting to their neighboring regions. A new report from MIT found that big wires would bring a lot of benefits. It would reduce climate and air pollution by allowing more clean solar and wind energy to be built and connected to the grid. It would reduce costs by allowing regions to share that cheap, clean energy with their neighbors. And it would also reduce blackouts by allowing regions to import extra electricity from their neighbors when their own power plants go down, for example, due to an extreme weather event. Passing the Big Wires Act would be a great win-win-win for the country. It's also important that in the process of streamlining permitting, we don't cut out the input of communities that would be directly affected by these infrastructure projects. But by taking steps to improve early community involvement, we can actually reduce overall project timelines by avoiding the need for time-consuming lawsuits. We just need to make sure that permitting reform is done right, and that's what CCL is working on. I'm Dana Nucitelli with the Nerd Corner. Thank you for being curious and for your commitment to climate progress. To join the discussion about climate science, technology, economics, and policy with CCL's research team, check out the Nerd Corner at cclusa.org/nerd-corner. That's cclusa.org/nerd-corner. I hope to see you there.
Thanks so much, Dana. If you have a question for Dana, email us, radio@citizensclimate.org. We will make sure he gets your question. Visit cclusa.org/nerdcorner to see the chart of the week, regular blog posts, and an active forum where you can connect with other nerds. Now it's time for our good news story with Horace Moe.
Hi. This is your one and only Chinese correspondent, Horace speaking. Today's good news comes from China. Yes, you heard it right. The largest emitter of carbon dioxide in the world just released its first carbon trading regulations. It is a groundbreaking step for China to regulate its national emissions trading system, aka the ETS. Now, a little historical background about the ETS for you. The ETS was officially launched back in 2021 to reduce emissions from the power sector. The ETS came out more than 15 years after the European Union launched the world's first international carbon trading market. Though late to the carbon trading party, the ETS will likely become the largest carbon trading market in the world. In my opinion, the newly released carbon trading regulation functions in two important ways. First, it designates the Ministry of Ecology and Environment to supervise ETS. the ministry will set a carbon emission threshold for electricity generation companies and create a plan to allocate emission allowances. Second, and most important, the regulation will increase violation penalties. The minimum penalty will start at 500,000 Chinese yuan. Well, really, I say renminbi. The number sounds a lot, right? Well, it actually equals $70,000. For a big electricity generation company, this is not that much. But if the company got caught in violation, it must forfeit all illegal gains. The company will also be fined between 5 and 10 times those gains. Under this mechanism, the penalty number will surely rise high. The Chinese carbon trading regulation will go into effect starting May 1st, 2024. While hearing so many promising aspects about the regulation, like me, you might ponder the loopholes within the ETS that the regulation does not address. Currently, the ETS still only covers electricity generation companies. Ultimately, though, the plan is to include companies from other heavily emitting sectors. In addition, there is still uncertainty about how China's national emissions trading system could be fully implemented. If the program fails to deliver its promise, the consequence might curb China's progress in slashing national carbon emissions. But, in general, I firmly believe this first carbon trading regulation sets a milestone for China's effort in addressing climate change. The regulation manifests China's determination to achieve its dual carbon goals, that is to peak carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 and achieve carbon neutrality by 2060. Therefore, with more years to come, let us hope and believe that China will fulfill its grand carbon goals and help the world shift to a greener future.
Thank you, Horace. If you have a good news story you want to share with us, please email radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. We've been talking about roles and what role you play, I play in this climate work. And you may be thinking, you know what? I need to deepen my climate work. If you're looking for action steps, visit our action page at ccclusa.org/action. In our show notes, Horace put together an excellent list of other action steps you might consider. We also have some personality quizzes, a full transcript of today's show, and much more. Visit ccclusa.org/radio. ccclusa.org/radio. Next month, Elizabeth Rush, author of The Quickening, Creation and Community at the Ends of the Earth, will tell us about her 52-day voyage in Antarctica. Brett Sees from CCL will chime in to tell us about the sights, sounds, and the disgusting smells he experienced on his trip to Antarctica. Plus, you will hear the story of an artist who worked with hundreds of children to create a life-sized whale made out of plastic bags. They successfully connected that art project to a proposed ban on plastic shopping bags. Stay tuned for next month's episode. It's episode 94. Thank you so much for joining me and Erica and Horace for this episode of Citizens Climate Radio. Many thanks to everyone who has been reposting what we share on social media. In fact, I will give a shout out to some faithful followers. Many thanks to the following CCL chapters: Silicon Valley North, San Diego, Boulder, Colorado, and CCL, Arkansas. Thanks also to James Bradford III, America's Future, Michael Cooper, and the group known as 1.5. You can follow us on Instagram, X, LinkedIn, Facebook, and TikTok. And feel free to repost anything you see. We're very happy when that happens. Our listener voicemail line is 619-512-9846, plus one if you're calling from outside the USA. That number again, 619-512-9646. This episode of Citizens Climate Radio has been written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano, and the CCR team, Horace Moe, Erica Valdez, and Dana Nucitelli. Other technical support comes from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance comes from Flannery Winchester. Moral support comes from Madeline Pera, who just had a birthday.
Happy birthday!
The music on today's show comes from EpidemicSound.com. Please share Citizens Climate Radio with your friends and your followers. Visit cclusa.org/radio to see our show notes and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.